welcome to the Fish Nerds, a show about fish, fishing, and eating fish. I'm Clay Groves, Chief Executive Fish Nerd of the podcast, and we're in a car driving right now, and next to me driving is Chris Prue. Say hello, Chris.
Hello, Chris.
And who are you?
My name is Chris Prue. If you listen to this podcast regularly, we recorded a podcast several weeks ago about a documentary I made about the restoration of the floodplain of Tunnel Brook in the western part of the White Mountains. So I guess I'm a media maker. I'm a filmmaker.
He runs the Chris Prue Media Empire.
Yes.
And so this, we'll put another link up on fishnerds.com with this Tunnel Brook video, but we decided to make a trip out, as promised, to revisit Tunnel Brook and see if the brook trout habitat restoration has worked. So we're on the way there. What are your concerns today, Chris?
Number one, that we make it. We're driving in a 2005 Honda CR-V. I don't think we're going to hit 200,000 miles on this trip, but my odometer is pretty darn close.
That's at 199,275. So we can totally roll that today, or roll the car.
Yes, I don't think we'll quite hit the mileage, but we might roll the car. Concerns today, though, we're driving the Kank right now. If you hear the background noise, that's the loud car.
Yep. Just a quick background, the Kankamagas Highway is one of America's scenic byways. Named for whom?
Chief Kankamagas, who was the last Sagamon of the... No, I'm sorry, that was his father, Pastor Conway. His grandfather was Pastor Conway. Kankamagas was known as the Fearless One, and he was the one who finally led his tribe out of New Hampshire into Canada. He was the one who basically conceded, yeah, these white men are not going to change their ways. Let's get out of here.
And he was right.
Yes, he was right. Good for him.
In fact, not only did we not change our ways, we got worse, if that's possible.
So that's they named this road after him, the Kankamagas Highway. We're driving that today. And, I'm just worried, Clay. This is my type of adventure. I'm not sure if it's yours, so I don't want to hear any complaining after we're done.
Yeah, and we will. There'll be plenty of complaining. What Chris is referring to is he likes to fish in places that are impossible to find, really hard to get to, and don't have any fish. So that's where we're heading today. But just a quick background. Tunnel Brook Road was washed out by Hurricane Irene. How many years ago?
2011 was when it happened. August of 2011. It's 2017 now, so that put it at, 6 years ago, if my math is correct. And basically, Tunnel Brook is just a traditional, a regular mountain stream in the White Mountains, what you see everywhere. Water's draining off the mountains through a notch, and it collects in the stream, and it eventually empties, and I don't even know where it empties. I think probably into the Ammonoosuc River somewhere, or into a larger river anyway. The story with Tunnel Brook Road was that this is a traditional Forest Service road. It was built in the probably late 1800s, early 1900s, when all of this land that is now National Forest was privately owned by logging companies. And back then, they didn't care about conservation or anything. They just wanted to put a road in as fast and as cheaply as they could. So they built a logging road right next to the river, clear-cut everything, and get out of there. So the Forest Service inherited this road when it became National Forest back in around 1918. And what they've done is, you know, every so often this road washes out because it's designed poorly. And what they do is they just put it back the way it was. So they fix it. They bring in fill and gravel, and they put it back the way it was. So people who enjoy the road for walking or hiking, some people use it to get to the Mount Moosilauk Trail. They put it back the way it was, so people don't complain. Well, in 2011, when the hurricane came and washed it out really badly, they said, you know what, maybe this isn't a good idea to keep sinking money into something that's just going to get more and more expensive to repair. So they decided to do the opposite. They restored the floodplain. They decommissioned the road, and the goal was to get this river functioning the way it was, way nature intended it to. So they ripped out all the culverts of all the little tributaries that flowed under the road. They ripped the road apart. They tried to restore the natural organic material instead of having all gravel and fill there. And they put some root wads and large stones near the river to kind of help prevent erosion, create better trout habitat, so that the main goal, if this is all working and the natural floodplain is working the way it should, you'll know because the litmus test is the trout. We'll have a natural reproducing population of wild brook trout in there, if everything goes well.
If everything goes well. And the great thing about the two of us going out here today is how scientific this experiment is. We are two of the best anglers New Hampshire's ever seen, and so if there are trout there, we will catch them. We don't need electroshock. We don't need science. We need our fishing rods. What kind of gear are you using today?
Well, I brought my my light spinning rod, and I like to use either spinners or you actually got me onto the trout magnets, which look like little rubber maggots. Mm-hmm. Those seem to work well. I also did bring my fly rod. I love to fly fish. It's tough to do, though, in places that are not fly fishing only. Like, if it's fly fishing only, then I feel good because I know I have no other alternative than to use my fly rod. When it's not fly fishing only, I'm always thinking I could be catching a fish some other way.
Some more effective way
with a spinner or something like that.
Our fly fishing fans don't like when we say this, but I would pit myself against a great fly angler anytime with spinning gear in an open situation.
It really depends. For me, it's Murphy's Law. It's whatever I'm using is the wrong thing, because I've been spin fishing plenty of times where there's been a hatch and you can see fish rising and you can't catch them because they're just, you know, they're hooked on whatever's hatching. And so I'm like, if I had my fly rod, I'd have a much better chance. So.
But if you had your fly rod, you would be casting wrong, you'd be doing something else wrong, and you'd be failing anyway. So, I don't know. But I appreciate the art of fly fishing, and I wish I was better at it. And I think if I were, I would not be so down on it all the time. I did fly fish a lot this summer, though.
It's fun. All you need is a couple of successes, and then you really enjoy it.
Yeah, I still never caught a trout on a fly. I've caught pretty near every other kind of fish, but not trout.
I've caught several trout on a fly rod, some nice ones too. And once you get those nice fish, it's pretty addicting.
Game changer. And I think what I do is this year I was determined to like marry my fly rod and make fly fishing what I did all summer. And the lack of success very quickly pushed me back to spinning fishing. So terrible start this year.
Never get married. It ruins a relationship.
No, I'm not going to have any comment on that. So we just got on the downside of the Kankabongus Pass, and we're heading down to Lincoln, New Hampshire, and stay tuned. We're going to be checking in as we get this trip going, and we're going to bring the equipment with us fishing, and we'll do some live reporting from the river, so stay tuned. Okay, so we are just about to get onto Tunnel Brook Road. We just went right past it, right?
We went right past it. I don't know why you're whispering. The foliage is actually coming out. It's a beautiful day. Moose crossing next 3 miles. This is my type of adventure. And Clay's getting his first look at Tunnel Brook. Clay, what's your first impression?
There's no water in it.
We're the downstream section of Tunnel Brook, and we're about to turn on Tunnel Brook Road right now, which goes for a while as a paved road and then turns into a gravel road.
Yeah, let me just describe this river. Imagine not a river anymore. Imagine a dried out riverbed with a trickle of water. Although, looking at it, it is clear water, lots of gravel, and lots of big flat rocks in there. It does look like brook trout habitat to me.
This is the type of fishing I love, because you hike a river like this and you... There are only a few habitable spots for these fish. So you hunt them down, you hunt out the spots, and you say, okay, if a fish is going to be anywhere within this section, it's going to be right there. You cast to that section, and you feel like you won the lottery, or you feel like a major, you know, sleuth, like a detective when you actually land a fish. You're like, oh, I knew it all along.
We drove an hour to catch a fish we can catch in our backyard.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we're gonna get up this road here, and we're going to pull in. We did stop... at a local convenience store to go to the bathroom, found the hottest water in New Hampshire, and then we bought, just in case our lures and flies aren't working, we did buy some worms. So we are hedging our bets on flies and on lures, but if nothing else is working, we are not afraid to use a worm.
We're getting close. We're gonna have to do a little bit of hiking, I think, to get to some good spots on the river, but I'm looking forward to this. I'm getting excited.
I am too, and I'm anxious to get out of the car too. I feel a little sick.
Oh, jeez. Should we open the window?
We should probably. All right, checking back in.
All right, well, we just parked, and we are walking on what used to be Tunnel Brook Road, now just Tunnel Brook Trail. And you can see right here, it's wide. You can see how a car used to pass.
We can see. This is an audio show.
Right. I'm hoping you can see, Clay. But just up ahead, you can see, or we can see, where it narrows into a trail. And this is where they've started all the work to decommission the road. And they had engineers design a plan to keep the riverbed kind of off the trail.
But there's no water.
There's no water. Well, this is, it is at, we're walking past an absolutely dry culvert right now.
God, and
this is what they call riprap. This is one of the few sections where they actually did make kind of a stone embankment, a bunch of boulders put together to keep the water from really eroding this trail. Because if this trail right here gets eroded, you can see up to our right, it's nothing but steep mountain.
There'd be no place to walk.
There'd be no place to walk. So this is the one place where they do want to keep the river from kind of doing what it wants to do naturally. So at least there's a footpath for us to get by.
And now it's like down to like one lane. We got to like walk in front of each other.
I'm behind you, Clay, now.
All right. So, and we're coming down and we're actually walking in the dry riprap bed right now, trying to find water.
So, this area right here, so this whole area that we're walking used to be a road. And it's hard to imagine that now because it's all dry riverbed channel. And what had happened that over the years is the Forest Service had repaired this road over and over from washouts. They put more gravel in, more fill. But at the same time, the river is growing in height because it's washing out, more sediment is flowing into the river. All the gravel and fill that they used to build the road, that goes into the river. So the river itself is getting higher, and it got to the point where the river was at a higher elevation than the road. So it's very easy. You have one embankment wash out, and all of a sudden the river is flowing into the road, and the road becomes the river. So that's what happened here. It's obviously dried out since, and it's just a dry river channel. But we're about to get into the main river stem right now, and we're about to see where they've done a lot of trout habitat building, putting in the root wads, the boulders, and hopefully we'll find a pool or two.
Well, I hope so. There is a puddle in front of us.
There is a puddle. I don't see any trout in the puddle.
No, there's no fish in there. Okay. Okay, so we just came out of a little hike in the woods here, and we're kind of up on a hill. And we're overlooking a couple dry riverbeds here. You were explaining to me what all these trees laying down here were.
Yeah, so we're on a little raised knoll right here coming out of this hiking trail, and affords us our first view of the actual riverbed. And it's off in the distance over there, and before you can see the riverbed, there's actually two or three kind of fake riverbeds where maybe some water, we had some really heavy rains earlier this spring, kind of eroded some channels. But right in front of us is a bunch of logs, and you can see that they were actually placed there purposely.
Well, it looks like there's a stand of like about eight trees that were all cut down in exactly the same pattern, and then logs laid kind of an X pattern around those stumps.
Combination of logs, some medium-sized boulders and stumps, and the goal of this was to keep sediment from going into the riverbank. So in the springs or anytime you get a heavy rainstorm, water comes off these hills, some very steep hills around us, quickly, and it washes the sediment from the old road into the riverbed, so the channel is always changing. Well, if we can get the water to filter out all these logs and things, will filter out the sediment as the water goes towards the river, only the clean water will get to the river and the sediment will be left behind. So that's the goal, to get this to act as a filter. And right now we also see some trees that look like they are toppling over naturally into the river.
And that's a good thing.
That is a good thing, because that's the way, these rivers have traditionally been. You've had mature forests on their edge, rain comes in, erodes them, the trees fall in, creates trout habitat. Eventually they get washed away by new storms. And the riverbed's always changing, but you always have, trout habitat being built into it, versus if you clear the forest from their edge, which is what logging did in the turn of the century, the heavy rains just erode the ground around it, and the rivers get straighter, shallower, and they don't support trout like they would otherwise.
Yeah, and I should say too, is from our vantage point now, we can actually see the river, which is exciting, and it is fall, just about fall now, and brook trout theoretically should be staging up for the fall spawn and run. So theoretically, they're going to be eating, right?
In theory, yes, in theory. What's nice today is a trophy fish is going to be like 4 inches long, I think.
Total win.
If we catch any sort of brook trout, that is the win here.
Yeah.
So.
All right, let's go do it. We've been hiking for like 17 miles. We're both winded, both hot, tired, hungry. So far we found no fishable waters.
We're naked and afraid. Somehow Clay has taken off all his clothes.
Old habits are hard to break. But we're coming up at the bottom of a big steep hill. Theoretically, the river would pool up down here, great little hole, and hopefully some habitat.
And this is the kind of adventure that I love, because we've been walking this pretty quiet mountain stream that doesn't look like there's a lot of trout habitat. And if there's a spot where there is, I think we're coming onto it, and hopefully this will be worth our while.
And there's all these great little mountain bridges and hiking trails and culverts and man-made log piles everywhere. It's really a beautiful hike. It's a stunning day. And we're coming up on what should be a pool. The big pool here. Wow. That sucks. This is our only hope here. So we're going to climb down this hill here and make some casts and see if we can't find a little pool that has a little bit of fish in it. This is sad.
It's a little bit sad. It's a little bit gravelly, not quite as root waddy as I had hoped.
It would be root waddy if there was water in it. The root wads are now about 3 feet above the water.
There's not a lot of shelter right here. Maybe we hike back down. Because there are some spots with some deep root wad pools that I think we're going to find a fish in. It's just not this one. And this is part of the adventure, Clay. It's knowing when to say no, admit defeat.
Okay, so we are in Tunnel Brook. We found a tiny pool where two different rivers combine. And with our eyes, we saw a little brook trout. Right, Chris?
Yeah, it was. I thought you were kidding at first, but the water here is so clear. It's like it's gin clear. It's and it's this pool actually is kind of funny because it doesn't seem to really be made by woody debris. Although there is kind of some wood up ahead. This is mostly just a rocky pool right here. The max depth is probably we say pool, but it's what, probably a foot deep, two feet deep.
I would say a foot in the deepest hole here.
That wasn't a big brook trout, but that was a trophy for this stream. Probably, what, 4 inches, 5 inches at the most?
I got him at about 8 inches, but he did hit my spinner. So we're going to switch up to some flies here and see if we can't get him. So stay with us. We've identified a fish, as you've heard, and he won't eat anything we're throwing. Chris is going to try the caddis nymph on his fly rod and see if he can't make something happen. But I can see the fish with my eyes, so we should be able to get him. Get him, Chris. What are you trying? Little panther martin or something? Little panther martin. That usually does good.
I'm thinking, the nice thing about this is it's food. Here's my fish psychology at work, which
that's Castmaster.
Which is pretty flawed, if Clay says it's a cast master, but my fish psychology is this. The lure represents food, but it also represents another fish. So if this guy's territorial, because he's the alpha and this is his pool, he'll be aggressive towards it, whether he wants to eat it or not. So,
and he's the only fish here. So yeah, we can see everything in this pool and we can see him directly. So
I'm going to try to set this camera up.
Okay, so here's what's happening. Chris is making a cast with his giant Castmaster, looking for this trout. He's holding his rod upside down, reeling it in. I don't see the fish anymore, but we're not giving up hope. Chris, what's your theory here on why he's not eating?
I think he's smart. Wild fish are smart, and it looks like several times he's darted towards what you've thrown at him. He's checking it out. He's agitated. He's aggressive. He wants to eat it,
but he's just making 100% sure he's not going to end up in our dinner plate.
And by the way, 100% sure he's not going to end on our plate. We are going to release this fish if we catch it.
After we lick him.
We're going to totally lick him. Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, so fishing conundrum. We've been throwing different lures, worms, flies at this fish here for about 25 minutes. We can see him. He's hiding under a rock now. He doesn't seem to be interested in us anymore. Do we travel downstream more and look for more fish, or do we stick it out in this pool until he gets so pissed off he bites? What do you think?
Well, we know there's a fish in here. Mm-hmm. So that it's hard to leave a spot where you know there's a fish. And it becomes kind of like a quest. You want to catch this guy. Mm-hmm.
To teach him a lesson.
To teach him a lesson, to show him who's boss. Right now, he's boss. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's a very smart fish because he's survived, apparently, a summer in this tiny little pool. He's got great survival skills. So,
and just to describe the pool,
he's outsmarting us right now.
We're describing the pool. Its maximum width across is about 10 feet. It gets down to about 3 feet on each end. There's two streams coming into it. And again, we said earlier, maximum depth maybe a foot. And he's hiding under a little boulder that's about 2 feet across.
Very clear water, very oxygenated. You've got this little waterfall heading into the stream, heading into the pool. And we would have probably walked by here and said, there's no fish in here, if we hadn't actually seen him. Because every once in a while, he disappears, and you can't find him anywhere in the pool. And there looks like there's no hiding spots, but he has these little caves under these rocks that he hides out in.
Yeah, totally cool to watch. And we'll see if we get him. You hear that, Chris? That's a sound of defeat.
temporary. The fish defeat is... You know, I was thinking about that fish and how different he is from a stocked fish who spent his entire life in... Well, he may very well be a stocked fish, but he's smart enough that he survived at least a summer in that isolated little pool or...
Well, you know, wasn't that isolated, Chris? What did we see around that pool?
What did we see around the pool? Well, I mean, he can get up and forth in the riverbed, but again, his pool, quote unquote, was what, a foot, 2 feet deep, so there's not a lot of place for him to travel.
No, but he wasn't isolated. I mean, people have been fishing there and camping there all summer.
Right. But anyway, he is a survivor, and his mentality has got to be a little bit different. I mean, I'm sure all hatchery fish are born with the instinct that people are bad, but then when your entire life, your experience has been contradicted by people feeding you nonstop, you probably lose some of that instinct and you're like, okay, people aren't that bad. This guy, we were 100% bad in his eyes.
He didn't have any patience for us whatsoever. He was pissed off that we were there. He was swimming in giant circles, darting all the place, and then finally he hit under a rock and we never saw him again.
So I'm kind of sad about hatchery fish and how kind of mentally messed up they are, their instincts being contradicted by experience.
Well, the other thing, too, with hatchery fish is, you know, you're breeding thousands and thousands of them, and there's no elimination for different genetic differences or markers that might make them get eaten fast. So sometimes they release these big, giant cows that are just like that, just big, giant cows. They release them, and they don't know what to do but eat, and they just eat whatever you put in front of them, and totally fun. But, man, this fish is work.
Yeah, and this is, again, the fishing experience that I love. It's like catching this one fish that when the fish says, you can't catch me.
Yeah, so me, I want to catch fish all day. I don't care. So we're going to move on downstream here and see if we can't do any better. And, of course, we'll report back. We have a little bit of success here. I've got a little brook trout par on my line here. Nice little wild fish. Let's see if I can... Anyway, I just landed him. He's a little tiny guy. He's about 3.5 to 4 inches long. Beautiful little fish. I'm betting a wild guy. I'm going to take some pictures, and we're going to let him go. Hey, Chris. Okay, so that little brook trout, I released him safely. He swam away. He was very happy. I wanted to let him go as fast as I could. He appeared to be a little wild fish. We caught him in about 6 inches of water, piece of stream that was about 4 feet across, right below a little waterfall. So this is exciting. We got fish.
You got a fish. I haven't gotten one yet.
That was a team fish. All right, back to it. Okay, so we're still at Tunnel Brook. We've been taking a little walk here downstream. We've hooked a couple little, very little baby brook trout. And they seem to like worms.
I think most trout do like worms. What doesn't like worms?
Everything,
right?
Likes worms. Delicious.
But this is the fun part. I love exploring little creeks like this and finding these pools. And like you said, they seem to be right below currents, right below little mini waterfalls, where it's probably a little, water's a little cooler, a little more oxygenated, and a little deeper. Yeah. But it's nice to see this happen, because you don't see rivers like this a lot with overhangs where the river kind of goes under an embankment a little bit.
Yeah, we're having to climb over a significant amount of trees and down little cliffs and all the things you love about fishing.
Yes. This is how streams should be natively in New Hampshire. This is how they were. So it's kind of nice to go back in time a little bit and see how brook trout actually lived.
Yeah, I bet you this would be a great spot for Tenkara fishing.
I don't think there's any good spot for Tinkara.
All right. Okay, so here we are, the last big pool by the bridge at Tunnel Brook. Chris is trying to get some video together. It's really deep here. This is the first deep water we found. This is a place we could have just stopped here and fished in the beginning. And it looks to be like 6 to 10 feet deep here after miles and miles of super shallow water. So theoretically, there should be some big brook trout sitting here on the bottom. Chris is going to make a few casts if he ever gets his camera set up. And then I'm going to catch the fish because he's terrible at it. Terrible. Chris, what are you doing?
I'm setting up my camera.
He's been setting his camera up for 35 minutes now. We're about to be late for lunch. It's going to be terrible. You know, some people use tripods. Chris likes to pile rocks up on a stick and balance things very peculiarly in a very special way. So stay tuned. Okay, so here we are making a mess at Tunnel Brook. Closing up our adventure here with a modicum of success. We've seen whole bunch of fish, caught two little brook trout, saw one decent sized one, but I would say a Tunnel Brook experiment is a solid win for us on this return to Tunnel Brook. We'll be wrapping this up shortly here as soon as we climb out of the riverbed. Thanks for playing.
Okay, so we're going to call it a success. We caught, I think, a total of three fish. Our Clay caught a total of two fish.
I caught two fish at Tunnel Brook, and we saw that one monster there, and then we caught a third fish somewhere else.
And in the end, it was exactly as I hoped. This was a major success. We found a lot of trout habitat that you don't see often in New Hampshire anymore. Rivers flowing under overbanks. Is that even a word, an overbank?
It is now. It's overbank. It's a compound word.
There's structure, there is shelter, and there was clean water. Nice thing is, I think the work that the Forest Service has done is doing its job, keeping the sediment out of the riverbed, because that was some beautiful looking water right there.
The strange thing is, after we hiked all the way down in the riverbed, catching a few little brook trout here and there, all this structure and habitat, we got to a spot where there was a really deep hole that's like 9 feet deep or something, and a huge, huge area. And we thought, perfect, we're going to catch a whole bunch of fish right there.
Yep. No, we didn't catch any fish right there. The fish that we caught, or mostly, you know, you caught, were in these small little pools. And this goes to the example. Whenever you say, oh, there's no fish in here, there usually are. You're just not seeing them. The little pool that we saw the bigger fish in, we would have walked by that 1,000 times and looked at it for a few minutes and said, there's no fish in here. But that guy was there. He was an excellent hider.
So it kind of makes it always, it's always worth taking a few casts and seeing what happens. And what I was shocked by today was how quickly the fish went under the rocks. Like, and this big fish went in this tiny cave and just disappeared. And it's remarkable.
It is. Their survival instincts are incredible. And they have to be to get through a summer in those environments to avoid other anglers, but predators. And they know how to survive in those environments. And it's really cool to see what these fish are living in. And we're talking about pools that are like 3 feet wide and, you know, 2 feet deep. And here's what we think are wild brook trout. That's right. We're at, yeah, did we say we're actually at the we're at the Beaver Bar at the Woodstock Station, which is my favorite little place in the western side of the White Mountains. The perfect way to end a fishing day.
Successful fishing day.
And this is the Fish Nerds Podcast, and we actually have apparently fans who are listening to our conversation and fascinated. Yeah, who doesn't like fish, right? So you hear a fishing story, you want to be part of the conversation.
What is your name?
Kurt.
Kurt, I'm Clay, and this is Chris.
Hi, how you doing?
Nice to meet you.
Kurt. And please tell me you hurt your arm in a fishing accident.
No, surgery. Yeah, I wish it was.
You need to make up better stories.
Yeah, fishing elbow, right?
Oh, yeah.
Surgery.
Yeah. Cast finger or something.
Now, do you fish?
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite species in the White Mountains?
Trout.
Brook trout, specifically?
Brook trout, yeah.
So where's the secret spot around here?
I don't tell anybody.
We were just fishing up in Tunnel Brook. They just did a lot of restoration work on that habitat, and we were catching the wild fish.
I like the Baker River, you know. When I was listening to you talking about the fish and the cover and everything, I remember a time I took a wetsuit and I went down and I went underneath a rock and I just watched the trout come in and out and just swim there, and then they just dart out to grab a piece of food and go back, you know. And I just remember that all the time, you know. The water's so cold, though.
Yeah. You know? The fish, the point of the story is the fish are always there. You just don't see them.
Yeah. Right.
No, it's funny. Incidentally, I did a lot of, back in like 10 years ago, I did a lot of electroshocking with the Fish and Game Department here in New Hampshire. And right here on the river here, this is the Pemigewasset, we did shocking back there. And we would electrofish the river, and we were amazed how many fish lived, again, in those, where there should be nothing. You get four or five big trout, a bunch of suckers, a bunch of fall fish, all kinds of really cool things.
It's really amazing what you can see, you know. Being under the water, too, is really interesting.
Yeah. We used to do some river snorkeling, too, which is always a ton of fun. But what's your best technique for brook trout?
I just float a worm.
That's what was working today, too. And on the way back, we stopped at Beaver Pond, just down the street here. And you chucked your spinning gear for a while, and I put a worm in like 3 seconds, I had a nicely stocked brook trout there.
And Clay, of course, got checked by New Hampshire Fish and Game. Just really nice fellow. We're glad you didn't get arrested, Clay.
I know, I didn't have my license on me, so he's like taking my name down. And I'm like, oh crap,
what
you know.
Where'd you buy it at?
Yeah. So Clay always, we both buy our New Hampshire Fish and Game licenses electronically. I actually usually print mine out, which was good today because I could show him. Clay always leaves his on his phone, and of course his iOS updated overnight, and he can't access his phone, so print it out, sign it, have it ready, make their job easier, because they're really nice.
Well, the hard thing, too, is I'm a fishing guide. Like, I should be the one who has all the stuff. I'm a licensed guide. It doesn't make sense for me not to have my stuff ready, and it's a little embarrassing. So, do you ever get busted?
No. I've seen some people get busted in Alaska. I've fished salmon in Alaska, and there are little girls with pigtails carrying a fly rod running across the banks that work for the Fish and Game.
That's a beautiful thing.
It is. They just, you know, you can't hook the fish. You know, they have to be caught in the mouth, or you have to release them, you know. And it's pretty wild doing that.
Yeah, my parents used to live there. They talked about people snagging fish all the time. And totally, that's illegal in New Hampshire, too, but. So.
I went in 2006, I went with my boss. We had to do some work up there. And I was showing him where the waterfall was, where the salmon jumped. And when we left, they had 3 native people face down on the ground in handcuffs. They had little sticks with a big hook on the end and a string. And they had like 8 fish there, and they busted them, you know. And it was strange because it was the military personnel who did it.
Yeah, well, they're just so protective up there, and they kind of have to be. It's one of those last like remaining wild areas we still have, and so they need to look out for it. So let's wrap this up. We're almost out of battery.
Nice to meet
say your name again.
Kurt.
Nice to meet you, Kurt. I'm Clay again. Right. That's Chris. We'll talk in a minute. No worries. So let's wrap this up. We're at the Woodstock Brewery, and
celebrating.
We're celebrating our double IPAs. We ordered a $5.99 chicken sandwich.
Yes, yeah. We an inexpensive and delicious beer, and all in all, this has been a great day. As we were driving here, I'm like, we're both fortunate. We live up here in the White Mountains. and we didn't as children. And I kind of aspired to that. And I just driving here today, I was like, this is it. Doesn't matter what else I do in life. I've accomplished my goals.
Right. You live in a great area with some beautiful habitat, great fishing, good mountains. All the things are here. All we need to do is get rich and then we can really, truly enjoy it.
Yes. Working is overrated for sure.
Where can people find your work, Chris?
My work, you can go to borealisproductions.com. Also check out the TV station White Mountains TV, which is at whitemountains.tv. And also on the Fish Nerds podcast, apparently.
Yeah, and links, of course, at fishnerds.com. All right, let's eat some food. So that's it. You've listened to a bunch of Fish Nerds when you should have been fishing.
We'd like to thank our families for supporting us while we podcast, go on fishing quests, and do all sorts of silly things that nerds do. If you would like to support the Fish Nerds, you can go to patreon.com and search for Fish Nerds to help us crowdfund this podcast.
Special thanks to Chris Brew of Borealis Productions.
And until the next time, I'm going to feel dirty reading this. Follow the code of the Fish Nerds. Spawn early and often.
Avoid free lunches with strings attached.
Swim against the current every chance you get.
Recording. This is podcast number 160 something. Chris Prue.
160 something. Wow.
All right. So I got a little script here, but that's just for me.
Okay.
All right. Until the end. Then there's a script at the end we have to read together. All right.
To read together.
Read it together. All
right. Hold hands while we say it.
We can snuggle.
Okay. Because you can. I know you can edit this, but will you edit this?
I do edit. Question. Yeah.
Because I'm gonna be rough. I think
you'll be fine.
Okay.
Three, two.